What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by the Brio Beardscape. This thing is rad. It's a portable buzzer with a huge battery, a powerhouse of a motor, and blades made of ceramic rather than stainless steel, so they get corroded less and they have to be lubricated less often. I've been using the Brio Beardscape for like a year and a half. This thing is sweet. It's the same size as a normal razor or a buzzer. Comes with a series of attachments. It's got a nice little carrying case. The battery lasts 180 minutes of use. That's a lot of shaving, people. For me, that's like a full year of shaving. And it's awesome. I don't have to oil it every single time I use it. I probably do it every other one. But it's a nice, nice piece of hardware. I've recommended it to a lot of people. Hit up Brio for Life. That's B-R-I-O, the number 4life.com. Use code SMOKING at checkout to get the best price on the internet for the Brio Beardscape. That's Brio4life.com/smoking. We got Continental belts and hoses, people. You don't always think about them, but they are there waiting. Your belts and your hoses under your hood, they're made of rubber. If you live in a dry climate, they can crack, they can puncture, they can rupture, leaving you stranded on the side of the road. Even if you're not necessarily in a dry climate, it can happen with age. These parts get dry rotted, and it's not necessarily stuff you're looking at with every service. Continental makes belts and hoses to an OE quality. They are OE on tens of millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line, and they're also OE on the majority of BMWs and Volkswagens. Now they've launched the aftermarket multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series, belts that are fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function. And Continental has an OE technology series multi-V belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the U.S. and Canada. Yet enough surprises working with cars and trucks, a belt shouldn't be one of them. Go with the Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V Belt, the belt with the OE pedigree. Get the full story at oetechnologyseries.com. And from now until July 1st, we've got the Overtaker's Pass shirt on our Blipshift store. Go to blipshift.com/TST. Blipshift.com/TST. Get this exclusive limited edition t-shirt from now until July 1st only. Get it before it's gone forever. On this episode of the podcast, Michael Harley is in the studio. He is the executive editor at KBB.com, but he's also written for Autoblog, Auto by Tell, JD Power and Associates, and a whole bunch of other folks. He's a good man. He's a good driver. He's got a lot of experience, and I love having him on the show. Michael Harley of Kelly Blue Book on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
So my commute is 96.8 miles.
Fuck but out you of know, here. Each way? Not each way.
Each way. Each way. But you have to understand, remember, L.A. is this spider web of freeways. So sometimes, like today, I was on the 710, the 91, the 5, the 55, the 405, the 101. I mean, so if we were in Atlanta or like St. Louis, it would just be one road.
Yeah.
But because it's L.A., you know, Waze is my best
friend. You have options.
Yeah. So I sit there in the morning, and I'm calculating, it's like an air traffic controller. Am I going over San Bernardino or what?
What's up, everybody? Live audience. We have one. They're here. There's a few of them here. We started a few minutes early, so
yeah. I wake at 4:10.
Wait, hang on a second. Because this is the Smoking Tire Podcast. Hello, everybody. It is a Monday. It is a Monday evening. It's been a nice weekend, and Michael Harley is in the studio. What up, brother?
Good to see you.
Wearing your Batman. Representing.
Yeah, you understand this was your fault.
That you bought one?
Yeah, wherever we were in a bar in Lake Tahoe.
I think we were on a press launch.
Porsche 911
the GTS
or something.
Yeah, and you were talking about the Porsche that you had ordered.
Yeah, I had ordered. It hadn't arrived yet. And Burkhalter said,
"Follow Mr. Harley on Instagram." Yeah, Burkhalter was there.
Burkhalter pulled out his Batman, and I went, "Holy crap, that thing is gorgeous!" And
it'd be.
And then let's see,
I had one as well.
6 or 7 months later, my wife got me one for my birthday.
Do you like it?
I love the thing.
It's great.
I love the thing. And I get a lot of compliments. I mean, I was at a professional basketball game and someone yelled across, "Batman."
No.
And I'm looking like, I look over my right shoulder like, "Frickin' Batman's here?" And then he points at his wrist. And then he just walks up the aisle to get his beer. And it was just like, people
recognize
it.
You're in a little club.
Yeah, people recognize it.
Yeah.
But you got rid of yours.
Well, yeah, but I done came up with it, though. I got rid of mine and traded it for two Rolexes.
Well done.
And this is one of them.
Well done.
This is the Explorer 2 in black.
Yeah, I remember when you got that.
I got one in black and I got one in white because I didn't know which one I'd like better. So I got both. And I knew that I would sell one back to Crown and Caliber for whatever I paid for it eventually.
Oh, they've gone up in value.
They have. But that went up in value so much. You're sitting on a gold mine with that Batman right there, my friend.
Yeah.
That went up in value so much, and it's still gone up since I sold mine.
And they've discontinued manufacturing. Now they're making it with a different bracelet.
With the Jubilee.
Yeah,
the Jubilee. So now those shot up in value. The second Rolex stops making something, they shoot up in value. And you are sitting on a little treasure chest right there, my friend.
That's good. So,
and I have an Explorer 2, which is a 42 millimeter.
This is a 40, I believe.
That's a 40. And so for my fat 8-inch wrist, the 42 actually looks better on me.
Do they make anything bigger than 42?
This the 42 Rolex has the Yachtmaster 2 is also 42. But it's like thicker than this. This is the biggest diameter they go.
It's
Rolexes are not big.
They've been getting bigger and bigger. My wife's got one from about 10, 15 years ago, and it's tiny.
Little. Yeah, especially if it's a lady's watch.
And now they looked at it, and they said, that's not worth anything because nobody wants that anymore.
Yeah, no one wants to buy a 32 or a 34.
Yeah, it's like a 32.
Yeah, even my wife, who's Hannah, who's a little petite girl, is like 5'2". She wears a 36. She wears a men's watch from the 90s.
Do you know who Jody Lai is?
No, who's Jody Lai?
It's a Canadian automotive journalist, super sweet girl. Mm-hmm. She wears the one that's all green.
Oh.
And it's a 40 inch.
Yeah, so the green dial or green bezel?
Green bezel and green
dial. So that's called a Hulk. That's a 50th anniversary. Or no, that's the newer version of the 50th anniversary. So, all right, let me back it up. They made a 50th anniversary Submariner beginning in 2006.
Okay.
It had a green bezel and a black dial. It's called the Kermit.
Right, I remember that
one. I have one of those. My dad got me one of those when I moved to L.A. as a going away present, and I wore it every day for 10 years.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I knew it was awesome, but I didn't know it was unique or special because I just didn't know anything about watches. But people started complimenting me on it, and that's kind of how I got in. Oh, this is special? What's special about that one? What's special about that one? Blah, blah, blah. Hers is the newer version of that, which is a green bezel and a green dial. It's pretty fire. They call that one the Hulk.
I actually like the Kermit a little better than the Hulk.
I do too.
I think there's too much green. And if you look at it in weird light, the greens don't really look the same green.
That's true because the...
One's a metallic look to it.
Yeah, because the dial material is ceramic and then the bezel material is ceramic. Excuse me. Where is it?
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, here's both.
Yeah, see, I like that one. I like the Kermit better.
The left is the Kermit. That's the older one. The black dial. That's the one I've got. And the right is the Hulk, which has this sort of glowy green dial.
Does that
come
with the leather band? Or is that
no, no. Someone put a leather band on it, but they both come with the Oyster bracelet like you've got. But this one's newer. This one's older. This one has a steel or an aluminum bezel, and this one has a ceramic bezel. Mine, the older one, has a nice kind of fade happening.
Does that
it.
Get beat up in aluminum though?
It will. It can get scratched and it can get faded. Yeah, but some people like that. You know, I didn't really notice it until I put mine next to a brand new one that somebody had. But like shit, mine's got kind of an ill fade going on, and a fade is good.
Fade's good.
Fade is if you have a fade without like scratches. That's like the best it gets. Like they call it a ghost bezel.
Put it down in your roof for about 20 years.
Well, they're fake aging them. You know, there's people are fake aging.
Put them under like UV lights.
Yeah, well, all kind of shit, chemicals, right? So like something like this. Yeah. So this watch would have been sold. This was a black bezel when it was new, and these are exposed to the elements, and they get called what's called a ghost bezel. So if you have a bezel that's ghosted like this, where it turns a gray. So the more gray it is with the fewer scratches it has, that's like as approaching like a perfect vintage watch. Wow. If your bezel or your dial is so ghosted that it's like no longer the color that it came from the factory. And here you combine a ghosted bezel with creamy lume, right? So in the lume dials turn
so
this yellow color.
That looks like it's been beat to hell. That like it came
that's
out.
That's probably worth fucking 25. That's probably worth 25 G's, dude.
Wow.
What, because these watches, you know, you buy that story, right? Like with a car, you know, a survivor condition
right.
car.
Right.
That's what you're looking at.
It's
here.
Got pedigree. It's got
totally.
History.
Yeah, and you want the story with that.
Wow.
Michael Harley of Kelly Blue Book is on the Smoke Guitar Podcast
today. Thanks for pulling up the site.
I'll plug you all day, son. What's happening with you? besides rocking your Batman? What's up with what's up in your life?
Doing
right
a whole
now?
Bunch of stuff. I've been listening to you know, doing a lot of catch up on your podcast. And was laughing.
A lot of road time for you.
That's... I think a crap lot of road time. Like I said, I get up at 4:40. I hit the road at 4:40 in the morning.
Oh yeah, before the beginning of the show went actually live, you were telling me about your absurd commute, which Lynn Woodward, one of your folks.
Yeah, she only commutes half as far.
No, but she was telling me about your commute on the show.
And
she was like, "Oh, you think I have a fucked commute? You should see what Harley does." So you live in Thousand Oaks.
I live in Newbury Park proper. Oh, yeah. It's actually a few miles up the road. I live in Newbury Park.
That's like well north of Los Angeles.
I drive
people.
Down to LA, to Irvine. So basically, you know, when they blow up the LA basin map?
Yeah.
I go from the top corner to the bottom corner.
I'm actually.
The pure hell of LA.
I have to show, like.
There is no worse commute.
I don't think there could be.
Like, unless I had to swim to Manhattan or something.
I don't even really think it, like, Newbury Park to Irvine. Like, I don't know if this will really show how bad this is.
It may ask for a second monitor.
Like, yeah, like, it's from where, here? Where
I saw it for a second. It was right
there. It's, like, right here.
All the way down
to Irvine. It's here. Newbury Park.
I think it's thinking about it right now.
It's trying to figure out.
There it is.
Fuck.
Yeah, that's it. But you see, I have all these different options.
You do have several.
So I can
options.
Change the scenery up, and you know,
and like if you time it right, you could drop over the hill here and then come down PCH.
And I do that. And like happen. Tonight, I'll actually go up PCH and through Malbikini. But take a look.
It's the most LA thing ever to talk about our commutes. But like this is the worst.
This is a bit.
So I like did it. My entire life exists, people. Right, my whole life exists. Like we're right here, right now. We're where this is, and my entire life exists basically there. That's bad.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, obviously we have a ride board, and I can pick whatever car is hanging on the keyboard. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, I was like, "Oh, I'll take whatever's fast and fun," and like then realized that I was visiting the gas station about every 48 hours.
Oh no,
it's a pain in the ass.
This is going to become a fuel economy discussion. I hope not.
So
that would be depressing.
Then all of a sudden, I went out and got I asked Honda for a Clarity plug-in hybrid. So now I'm getting like 98 miles per gallon. So now the commute doesn't matter anymore.
The Clarity is not. Is it still hydrogen?
They have an FCV, which is a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle.
Okay, yeah.
And they have a plug-in one that does like 50 miles on a battery and then another couple hundred miles on gas.
Okay, so kind of like a Volt, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the one with the funky wheel spats.
It's one of the
ugliest
vehicles. My apologies to the entire Honda PR team. It is one of the ugliest vehicles on the
road. Ever made.
And I told them I wanted it in silver, and it's got carpool stickers, and I'm invisible to the cops. And I'll... do 85 miles an hour in the morning on cruise control at 4:30 in the morning, and the highway patrol will actually just drive by me and shake in disgust and just keep going.
You know what I find is so amazing is like the section here from the middle of the doors up, right? If you go between, you know, between the base of the windshield, base of the rear window, middle of doors up, that is a Ford Fusion.
It is.
Right? It is. Right? And then there's a Civic here, you know.
Oh, that's absolutely Civic in the front.
Right. And yet, God, is this terrible. How much do you think this spat over the rear wheel here gains you in miles per gallon?
So this is the funny part. Any of our listeners out there, if you can find the drag coefficient on a Honda Clarity, Honda won't publish it. Because I think what they did is they went to this thing with this great optimism of, we're going to build this car that has this incredibly low drag coefficient of probably like 2.5, 2.4, and then Tesla comes out with a Model 3 and does a 1.9 or something.
Is that what the Tesla Model
3 is? Tesla's really, really low. I'm not sure exactly, but it's really low. Look up Model 3 drag coefficient. But now Honda will not talk about the drag coefficient whatsoever. And
really?
You can't find it anywhere.
What's the Model 3?
What car is the best drag coefficient? Click on that.
Let's see. Where are we
Model 3, 0.23.
0.23. That's pretty good.
And
although,
there's no
in fairness, 2013 Mercedes-Benz CLA blue efficiency, 0.22. Yeah. And the 5 Series?
Well, the 5 Series on skinny, like 205 tires.
Oh, is it? Is that what it is?
What they do is
the efficient dynamics edition.
Usually, tires, every time you add another 10 or 15 millimeters of width, you're adding another tenth of a point in drag coefficient.
But yo, let's give a shout out, though, to the 2016 Mercedes E-Class.
That's
a 0.23.
It's pretty slick.
A fucking E-Class?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to the E-Class.
But I don't know why the Clarity looks the way it does. It generally, you know, it's...
Is it nice to drive?
It's very comfortable. They've got acoustic glass. It floats. It weighs 4,100 pounds or something like that. So it just glides along. You know, the biggest problem I've got is it's got the low rolling resistance tires, which are the opposite of Cup 2s.
Yeah.
So when in L.A., everybody jams on their brakes. Mm-hmm. I start applying the brakes. The wheels automatically start locking because they have no grip.
Are you actually getting like
and
ABS?
I just sit there and just go, oh, shit. And two or three times, you know, sorry, Sage. Sage is Honda PR. I've almost totaled the whole front of the car just because of plowing into someone. It just doesn't want to stop. You know, you got 4,100 pounds on narrow.
Can you use your editorial budget to improve the situation a little bit?
No, I'm not going to put Cup 2s on it. But last year,
Cup 2s.
So last year, I commuted
pilot sport all seasons or something.
Last year, I commuted back and forth in a Kia Stinger GT, with the Michelin Pilot Force, Sport Force, and that thing was great, but it drank gas.
Yeah, if you're doing 200 miles a day,
it drank gas.
You know, you're almost like prime Tesla candidate. If you installed like a some super crazy
my
juice
objective
charger
is for
in your house.
2020, I want to get a Tesla Model 3 because I can plug it into both ends. We've got I've got a level 2
charger
at home.
Oh, you can
charge
it each end.
I got a level 2 charger at the office.
Yeah, you can get one.
Did you see what I took home? Oop, don't bang on the table.
Yeah, you got it resonates a little. Sorry.
Last night I took over the weekend I had a G63.
Oh, here's it's on your Instagram, Michael Harley on Instagram. This is the new Javagen. What color is that?
It's
that brown?
An olive green, and it's a Designo $6,500 option or something.
Designo.
Yeah. But it on the highway, what do you think my highway mileage was? No stopping, just because what I do
just
now
a cruise.
Is, because I do this every single morning, I've gotten to the point where I could do it in 71 minutes, 86 miles, and I reset the odometer, I pull out the GPS, everything.
Yeah.
So what is the cruise? It was the, tell you, it was the lowest vehicle I've tested in the past 3 years.
Highway miles per gallon.
Highway,
and it's a
100%.
Yeah, yeah.
Cruise
without
control.
Traffic.
What is it? I think it's a 9-speed automatic, a 4-liter.
4-liter twin turbo, right?
4-liter twin turbo, 577 horsepower.
I'm going to go with 11.4.
Oh, come on. It was 17.
That's the worst you've ever
17.6
seen.
Because most cars just even like a McLaren 720 did like 26.
Well, a 720 is extremely efficient,
and it goes super high gears. And
I just had
cruises.
I just had the Huracan Evo this weekend. Have you had a go in that yet?
Yeah, I was there with Kristen.
Oh, you were there for the press launch, right? So I took one of the launch cars home for a couple of days, and I got 18.5 on a highway drive.
That's really good.
That's only 1 mile per gallon better than the worst you've ever tested.
But how do you drive?
I had my wife in the car and I was driving pretty chill.
So what did you think of the 4-wheel steer on that car?
So I thought I actually found that it's this is my friend came out with me and did a real cinematic pan for me.
That's a really long pan.
A really long pan.
For having no cars in the image.
Well, he was emphasizing the birds chirping in the background, which you can't actually really hear so much.
The car sounds sweet, doesn't it?
Oh, it sounds the business. So the 4-wheel steer, sort of like a Porsche, I think, in tight maneuvering, parking lots, U-turns for photos and shit like that.
Oh, it's great.
Amazing. And actually, I thought in the fast stuff, it did a pretty good job approximating the aero shit you got with the Performante. I thought this car was just, without a stopwatch, I could not tell the performance difference from Performante to this.
Absolutely.
But I couldn't, and
Kristen,
it rode better.
Did Kristen tell you at the launch, it was sort of a customer event? We were sort of thrown out on Big Willow.
Yeah. Big Willow's a gnarly place.
It's a gnarly place, but we got two or three hot laps, and that was about it. So what I really wanted to do was to try it, because I had the Performante for a whole week, and I took it up Mulholland. Yeah. I took it on all my favorite back roads.
Did you have the coupe or the Spider?
The coupe.
Okay.
The coupe.
Because you're tall.
Yeah.
You're taller than me, even.
And yeah,
and
when
the Spider.
I'm tilting my head.
The Spider's unbearable if you're over like 5'11".
But the same thing you were talking when you did the podcast with Kristen is that I'm 6'2", and every single Lambo, the second you hand me a helmet, my head goes sideways.
Yeah, that's the end of that.
And all I keep thinking is if I'm going to hit a big bump and snap a couple vertebrae. But like you said, when I get in it, I hit my head. When I sit in, I get my head. Yeah. And the Italian guys come around and go, what's the wrong? What's wrong? Just recline the seat. So I recline the seat, and pretty soon my knees are in the dashboard.
Yeah.
And they're giving me the thumbs up like, you're ready now. And I said, but I can't turn the wheel. I can't touch the pedals. Yeah. I can't do anything else. So
this is not the car's fault, Michael. No.
And I don't have that problem in the 720.
No, the 720 is a tall man's supercar. It's fantastic. Or a tall woman's supercar.
Really nice.
I'm sorry for excluding women from that statement.
But this thing sounds so incredible.
Yeah, and I drove it for 4.5 days. I went to San Diego and back with it. I stuffed it full of shit.
Do you put all your shit in the nose?
I put a... So because it's all-wheel drive, their trunk is a joke.
Oh, it's
the
like
trunk
a Carrera
is
4
a
has
joke.
A restricted
it's
nose.
It's tiny. Yeah. So I have like a, briefcase plus, let's call it, size bag. Maybe like a non... Like not a carry-on, not a roll, but like it's small. So we got that. And actually there's a garment hanger behind the passenger seat. So
there's
we
were, a little shelf back there.
There was not the shelf, but we were able to hang Hannah's like dresses
but
against
Hannah
the
had
bulkhead.
To go forward a couple inches.
Yeah, yeah. But she's short, so it didn't matter. It was fine in traffic other than it being kind of uncomfortable. Like the ride was lovely. Quiet mode was quiet. It's got this new stereo in it that's like better with the touchscreen thing, although it was kind of buggy. It was a little bit. I had some trouble with it, honestly. I had some trouble with the stereo. If I'm totally honest, it was being a pain in the ass.
It's got a quite a graphic show on that center console, too.
There's a lot going on.
You could
on
sit there, and we're on the track, and they're like, play with all the stuff. And I'm like, I don't need to see the... I'm in turn 8-9 at
Willow
a buck
Springs.
30,
yeah.
And I'm supposed to be, check out the steering wheel angle right now. And I'm like, who the hell's looking at that stuff? I mean, now that your passengers are white-knuckling it, they're not looking at it.
Yeah.
But it's cool in the showroom.
It's a mildly hokey gimmick, but ultimately they continue to evolve the cars in a good way. I mean, is it bigger and beside?
But
no,
they're also holding it's a genuine Lambo, and everybody knows instantly it's a Lambo, and every time they make one, it gets better and better.
Yeah, and they've made it if you fit in it properly, if you're the right size for the car, like. There's no reason you couldn't daily drive that car.
How do you fit in yours?
It's roomier than this. Getting in and out of
well,
it sucks.
You know, crash standards. I mean, you know.
Yeah,
to about
no, totally.
Your A pillars
and I also,
are the size of.
Yeah, I don't want to know what happens if you crash one. But I do have to take my shoes off. That's the bad thing about it. But once I take my shoes off, it's
is it because the foot box isn't
it's
tall?
Narrow? It's really narrow. Even if I have driving shoes on, I can't. That's kind of annoying, but I don't care. I drive a barefoot.
Have you ever driven a Cobra?
Like not a real one. I've driven replicas. Cobra. Yeah, yeah. I had one of those.
All your feet are just shoved over. The side.
Yeah, it was terrible. I didn't like them at all. And I drove the Superformance GT40 where I had to take my shoes off as well. And that car,
I could barely fit in that car.
That thing is real little. It depends on which side you drive on too. I drove on a left because they make it. You can get any possible configuration from them.
Oh.
You can go left-hand drive, right-hand drive. You can go right-hand drive, sill shifter. You can go right-hand drive, center shifter. You can get anything you want.
You can configure it.
Yeah. So I drove it left-hand drive, center shifter, but you can do anything. So a lot of them, they do right-hand drive, sill shifter to keep it real, I don't know, authentic or whatever. But yeah, depending on how you get them, like the right-hand drive ones, the pedals are all kinds of fucked up. What else is going on? What else have you driven that's like real, real nice or real shit?
Let's see.
Where have you been that's been amazing?
I just drove the Bentley Continental GT.
Oh, please tell me everything.
The convertible version.
Tell me
and it
everything.
It was absolutely gorgeous. And I can come out.
I sincerely apologize, people, for just like
it
leaving
is not a clarity.
Whatever picture up I left up for like 20 minutes. My bad.
But you know, the new Continental GT is now based on a shares platforms of the Panamera.
Yeah.
And the previous one shared platforms with the Phaeton, which was more of a front-wheel drive, a front nose-heavy all-wheel drive system.
Mm.
And a Haldex system, I believe, on the last one?
I don't want to say that definitively, but I think
but
it's
me,
based
every
on
time,
a front-wheel drive.
Every time
drive
I drove the previous Bentley GTs, I just never wanted to throw them into a corner. They always just
the
felt
VAS
like they were just
was kind of
they were
fun.
Just rolling over the front outside wheel, and it just had that really the front wheel drive feel to the steering wheel, like the nose is just doing too much. A good looking car, a nice cruiser car, but I never feel like I really wanted to mess with it.
Yeah.
And finally went over to Spain and drove the new convertible, and it was gorgeous. just absolutely freaking gorgeous. It now feels like, you know, it's a, I think it's a 60-40 torque split or 50-50, and it just feels right.
Someone, I forget who was on the show a couple weeks ago, one of the heavy press car hitters, it wasn't Dan Neal, but it was one of them types, and he brought the coupe by here, and fuck me, is that some interior. That is
gorgeous.
Ridiculous.
It is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
And we had the convertible, and we drove it all up in the mountains, and we went up to where it was like 39 degrees, and we just put the neck warmers
the air
on.
Scarf.
But we made a pact, and who's
this?
I think it was Jason Harper and myself, and we said, you know what? We are not going to put the roof up. And the entire time we drove, roof down, drove on the coast, and it was 70 degrees.
That's a great growl.
And it pops, and just hauls ass.
Kristen Lee and I in Arizona for the 720S, we made a pact, 720S Spider, we're not going to put
that
the roof up. Yeah, and then it hailed.
Yeah.
We tried to go push through the hail. At a certain point, we're like, this is a stupid game.
You know, I did that... Angus McKenzie and I, years and years ago, there was an Aston Martin Virage.
Oh.
And it was just that, it was like this really awkward time in Aston Martin's
like
history.
Like early 90s Taurus steering wheel kind of thing?
And they came out with a Virage, and they put these high-performance Pirelli, I don't think they were courses, but they were pre-zeros, and we drove it in, down by the Strait of Gibraltar, way down, and it started hailing and snowing on us.
Oh,
and
my God.
Aston Martin was mortified.
Would it be this Virage?
No.
Like one of these?
This one. Yeah.
This?
That's
this one?
Mirage.
Orange or here?
I'd go with the orange one. That's
like
the
newer one?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because there was a Virage from the
2011, 2012.
Okay, well, there's a Virage from the fucking 90s, too.
And
I
that's why they brought the name back.
Yeah.
But this was such a short-lived car.
And, yeah, it's basically a molded-on body kit for the DB9, pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah.
I bet. I mean, it's actually quite a pretty car.
It's a pretty car, but I've never been... To me, an Aston Martin is more of a cruiser car. It's never been something I say, hey, let's go hit the canyons in.
Yeah, have you driven
the new one, I'm still not... It just doesn't feel right.
The new Vantage?
Yeah.
The new Vantage, to
sounds
me...
Sounds good.
Yeah.
But it's goes like a super hypersensitive steering.
Yeah.
And
real twitchy.
It's got shitloads of power. Thank you, Mercedes-Benz.
Yes.
But it just doesn't... It's not one of those cars you feel like, hey, where's the nearest corner? I want to go fly.
But it's also not very good in traffic. I've said this a bunch of times. People on the podcast have heard me say this so many times.
You want to pull up the new one?
Yeah, whatever. I have found that car in traffic to have the grabbiest brakes combined with the most aggressive idle creep out there. And so it's a really bad combo.
So it's creeping at like 45 miles an hour?
Yeah, like the Hellcat, too.
You like that launch color?
I had the launch color. It wasn't. The launch color I liked better. I had two different colors. One was like white, I think, and the green one. I liked this green better. This car actually works in nuclear colors, strangely enough.
It's a good-looking car. I still think the it's got a lot of the gaping. It's sucking a lot of air in.
I think the end of the previous generation will age much better and ultimately be worth more. Like if I was looking to buy something in that class right now, I'd be looking at like a 15 to 17.
No, the truth is you go buy like a 2002 Vantage for like 38 grand.
Same thing.
Put some new wheels and tires on it, and your neighbor thinks you got a brand new Aston Martin.
I know. And I remember back in like 06.
And you get like a V8 manual.
Yeah. They were fun. They were slow, but they sounded right, and they were good. They were fun as shit.
And it's a looker. It's one of those cars. And, you know, I say, you know, you and I drive a whole bunch of cars. And when you go to the gas station, that's probably the most telling part as far as what the public thinks of it. Mm. You pull up in an Aston Martin, and you're cool. And you're very approachable. You pull up in a Ferrari and people are like, what a dick. I'm just going to like take a picture under their arm. Mm-hmm. They're taking the snappies. But it's very interesting. So an Aston Martin, you're cool. You know, a big bad Mustang, everyone thinks you're cool.
Yeah.
Cool Camaros.
The Countach, you are fucking the king.
See? That's a cool car.
Yeah, yeah.
But on a brand new Lambo,
Lambo. It's so funny because I'm driving around this. I just gave back the Evo today. And as I'm driving it around, it's actually funny because of how the roof comes down. I can't see above like the wheel line of any other car. So people could be looking at me. If they are, I can't see them. So I don't fucking know. I'd have to bend my neck in the most awkward action to see them. But like when I see other people driving Huracans, I think about them.
Right.
What people thought about guys driving Countaches in 1987. And here I am, like, looking down on them. What a dick I am.
It's funny. My I've got a 20-year-old son. His name is Patrick. And we always see, you know, in LA, you see guys driving crazy cars all the time. And yeah. You're like, what does that guy not want? And he doesn't want someone to come up and, like, thumbs down. You know, yeah. Just like to piss him off. So we'll go out of our way to piss people off.
I've had a couple, I forget. I've had some people like shout like terrible things at me before when I'm driving sports cars, but like not really. Usually it's pretty cool.
It's usually very positive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's people who say things under their breath. They don't say shit out like screaming at me, but like.
I drove a Bugatti Chiron.
Ooh, how was that?
I've not
probably
had
two
go.
And a half weeks ago. So it was one of those things that this is an embarrassing story, but about when it made its first rounds about a year and a half ago, Bugatti called up and said, "Hey, we want you to drive the Chiron." And I just accepted a Toyota Corolla trip up to the Pacific Northwest, and I just booked my flights. You know how once you're booked your flights, your hotels, and I'm like, "Damn, yeah. I'm already set." And you know, they called up and said, "We really want you to drive the Chiron. We've got one. We've got a 2 or 3 hour window for you." And I just sulked away and said, "I got to pass, and I'm going to go drive a Corolla." And I was so angry the entire time of the Corolla, meeting my, you know, the processed food up there. And I'm like, I'm supposed to be driving a Bugatti now.
Funny.
So, thankfully, it came full circle. I said, keep me in mind next time you get an opening. And Michael Haas, who's now got the Bugatti account.
I don't know this person, but can you introduce me to him? And I can buy him diamonds and coffee.
And he's got a bunch of Ducati. He's got Bugatti.
Well, I just got my first Ducati press bike.
I'll hook you up.
Yeah.
So anyway, he calls up and he says, "Hey, Mike, what are you doing tomorrow afternoon? We've got a Chiron in Santa Monica. We've got a 2 or 3 hour window for you." And I said, "I'll take it," even though it's the world's worst place to go. So I picked it up, and we spent about 3 hours in it and drove all the way up the coast, did Mulholland, did Encinal.
Must have fucking destroyed Encinal.
So I
this
had
car
driven,
must mob up that road so hard.
It's just so big. So I drove the Veyron, the first Veyron, the 1,001 like horsepower. Yeah, yeah, the very first Veyron from LA to Phoenix. Mm. And it was one of the, and it was a really cool drive. It was the middle of the summer. The car was hotter than hell because it had the glass roof.
Oh, God.
And once you sit in one of these cars that has such a big ass engine, there's so much heat soak that the floor was getting hot. My arms hurt.
In a lot of cars, you have coolant lines and hot oil running lines down, that run down the side of
down
the
body.
Sills.
So you could feel the heat coming off the sill. You had heat in the transmission tunnel between your legs. Even all that
this
shit
is why,
there.
For the record, 911s are good.
Yes,
everything
is behind you. And there's cool air blowing everything behind you. So we're crossing the desert in Phoenix, and I've got the air conditioner on full blast, and I'm like, is there any way to make this thing cooler? And they're like, sorry, you know, this is the way it is. But that was the first generation.
Well, I mean, listen, your expectations for $1 million are just too high.
Well, most owners are not going to go 8 hours behind the wheel.
But that's why you buy a fucking Volkswagen-built supercar, so you can.
Right.
That's the entire point.
But the Chiron is nice because completely redesigned, much better cooling system. We sat in traffic for about an hour going up PCH, you know, crawling from, Santa Monica Pier to Topanga to Sunset, just crawling.
Yeah.
And then it finally opened up. The car hauls ass, much better throttle tip in. No turbo lag. I mean, the Veyron was... Did you ever drive a Veyron?
I drove a Veyron for like 10 minutes.
You step on the gas and it was like a 747 taxiing.
Yeah,
you know, the pilot,
yeah,
you hear the pilot go whoosh, and then you look out the window and then you start creeping and then he throttles back and then you glide for another 50 feet on the tarmac. That's how the Veyron was. It just had so much freaking power, but there was so much lag.
Yeah.
This thing, you step on it, it's got sequential turbo. So the first turbo kicks in from like 0 to 3,500 RPM, and then all hell breaks loose because the second one kicks in. And I was on a Canaan. You know, there was a little short passing stretch on Canaan, and I just looked over it, and there's a dude that comes in the right seat.
Of course, it comes with a guy.
Anything over $1 million comes with a dude.
Yeah.
And never come with beautiful women. They always come with a dude.
No, if it's a Lamborghini and you're at a track day, then they only hire hot chicks. It's like it's one of those things that nobody wants to talk about because nobody wants to change it.
Be politically incorrect.
I know.
So I mashed the throttle. And it just lights up like a Saturn V. And I was just like, holy shit. And it was a really fun, good. I'm like, I'd walk, 100 miles to go drive another one again.
Did you fit in okay? I fit fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't fit because in the Veyron very well.
The Chiron is so much better than a Veyron. And I said, is it worth a million? It's worth $1 million more.
Wow. $1 million more.
$1 million more. But it's so good. And this one was the same color you got on your screen right now.
I mean, I had, I had a carbon fiber in a Koenigsegg one, in a Gera R on the runway for like 10 minutes. Like not, but I got a runway. Like it was 10 minutes on a runway. And I went, this is $2 million. Absolutely. There's no question this is $2 million. Add 1,000%. I don't have $2 million, but I know what that feels like now, and that's the baseline.
Did you drive have you ever driven a Pagani Huayra?
No, I've been in very close. I haven't driven one, no.
So I didn't think that was worth the money.
I've heard not great things about how
it
they drive.
It just wasn't. I took it on Angeles Crest all the way up and down, and it just wasn't sorted out is probably the best word. You know, the sum of its parts didn't add up to something that really made me feel special. Oh, bloody 175 miles an hour on closed roads.
175 miles an hour on Angeles Crest?
I mean, just hauled. But
I had
a stunning mechanical.
I don't particularly think they look very good either. Let's just call it not my taste.
When you go into the corners, these little flaps start coming out of the nose, and you just get the goosebumps.
You know, this car is the equivalent of one of those watches that has like four tourbillons in it, and it just doesn't really even do anything. But it's just the fact
there's
that
no way those flaps do anything.
Right, like there's a
40 miles an hour in a corner. You're not getting 90 pounds of downforce.
Like, I have to show you, like, there's a watch. I spelled it wrong. Quator watch. There's a watch that's, oh, man.
Interesting.
Sorry. It's hard to think about two things at the same time. So there's watches that have, like, multiple escapements and, like, multiple tourbillons. And, like, they don't really necessarily do anything. Like, they're just, like, complicated for complexity's sake. And I picked a bad picture. This is an MB&F, and it's fucking beautiful. But, like, that's what, like, the Huayra is. It's, like, it's complexity for complexity's
sake. Right, when you
get
in there and you look at you said a few minutes ago, you know, the four-wheel steer on the Evo was nice.
Yeah.
So I had this, the Huayra, up on Angel's Crest for doing photography in the industry, we have to drive back and forth, back and forth. And we usually go up a quarter mile, flip a bitch, go back a quarter mile, flip a bitch, and it's a pain in the ass. This Huayra was like a 15-point turn.
Oh.
And it kept stalling because the differential was so tight
that it would lock itself up. Yeah.
So here I am, perpendicular to Angela's Crest. No cops in either end. Stalled like,
million-dollar car.
A stalled million-dollar car. So I'd lean over and, put in neutral, hit the start button again, and it was a cumbersome drive. But it was one of those things that everyone always says, have you ever driven a Pagani Huayra? Yeah.
A cumbersome drive, it would be probably how I would describe the Countach as well. Like, the Countach dynamically is great on Angeles Crest, but yeah, cumbersome if you have to make 3-point turns and shit is an appropriate one.
And you got manual
same
steering,
thing.
Right?
Yeah, and the same thing with that very tight diff, where if you try to make really tight turns, it locks up and gets chattery, and I thought it was broken. They're like, nah, that's how they do it. I wanted to show you this real quick because this is the watch I was looking for.
Wow.
This is the Roger Dubuis Quator.
That's the entire face right
so
there.
So all this fucking thing does is tell time. It doesn't do anything else. And so it has...
It looks like it makes coffee.
Right, and so it has 1, 2, 3, 4 escapements, okay? So it has one mainspring, 4 escapements, and 1 set of hands. So what the car equivalent to this is, okay, imagine you had a car that had one engine that broke into 4 different gearboxes, all of which were synchronized together, but then came back together to only drive one wheel. That is the equivalent of this watch.
So that's super complicated. To and do all it does, everybody else does with one engine.
But it's $1 million because these 4 escapements are spinning and going back and forth, and
that's
they're all in bucks. Yeah, and they're all in tourbillon cages. So this watch has like so much movement happening in that if you see someone wearing it, you just go, "Money, that's money."
Well, this guy's got to wear a cloth on his wrist to wear it.
That's probably on like a pillow. It's probably on.
That's crazy.
Yeah, let me see if there's one on a guy's wrist.
But one thing for the listeners, you know, don't confuse the price of the car with how much fun they are to drive.
No.
And, you know, people are like, oh, $1 million car has got to be $1 million worth of pleasure.
No.
And it's $1 million worth of looks and gawks.
Yeah.
But not necessarily, you know, hey, I'm going to grab the keys first.
Yeah. And there's other cars that are, I think you can have a ton of fun for a fairly reasonable amount of money these days. I actually think that there's a lot of value in something like the Veloster N, which I had
to
go in.
Car.
It was rowdy. So
that's a
fun.
Great little car.
Yeah, it was super fun. Yeah.
That's a great little car. Oh, you know what? I also just went back to Road Atlanta and drove the GT2 RS back to back with the GT3 RS.
Oh, who was just there for that? Carlos Lago? I think he was there.
I think Carlos was with me at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
Chasing Hurley Haywood around.
Yeah.
And it was sunny and dry, which was nice because last time I drove on that track in the GT3 RS, it was downpours, buckets, and Porsche
that
says,
sounds
who cares? This is perfect. And
don't you hate when they say that shit? I went to a
race. They didn't even blink, and I'm like, can you give me some rain tires? And they're like, no, this is perfect.
I went to Skip Barber when I was first starting out. I mean, maybe like 2005. I didn't know anything. And I went, you know, Skip Barber, learn, right? And I'm in them open wheel cars.
This is one in Phoenix?
This was in Lime Rock.
Okay.
And it was these, I was living in New York at the time. It's those super shit pile open wheel formula cars they had. And it was pissing rain. And the instructors were like, you guys are so lucky. Nobody gets to do this. And I'm just going, fuck you. Like, I'm cold and wet, and this is terrible. And I'm going to crash. And by the way, I did. I did crash.
But you're right. They look at it like you're a rookie cop, and you walk out the door, and you get held up and shot at, and a car crash. And they're like, how lucky are you? Your first day.
Your first day.
And you're like, hang on a sec. I wanted to go rescue a kitten in a tree on my first day.
Maybe a speeding ticket?
Yeah. You're right. They look at it and they're like, you know, Hurley's like, last time was pouring. This is, you're going to learn the car control. I'm like, I'm going to put your $175,000 car into a wall. You don't look at it that way. I'm scared shitless.
I'm going
you're
to test your safety features.
But it was fascinating driving the GT2 RS, which is a turbocharged,
yes,
against the GT3 RS, which is an NA engine. And
makes the three feel kind of slow and manageable, doesn't it?
But I really like the three because you could hold it at, you know, between 5,000 and 7,000 RPM.
Hey, folks, if you're watching, I am sorry for leaving apparently that other picture on the screen. I'm sorry. Oh, no, I pressed two. Oh, I see what happens when I just got it. When I type, all right, I just learned, I'm learning, sorry, Harley, I'm learning production in real time. So what happens is, I use the keys 1 and 2 to switch between my cameras, but when I type GT2 RS in the thing, it also switches.
Oh, because you hit the 2.
Because it's 2. I need to reassign
now,
a key.
Now, what if
you
use these keys up top?
I don't know. I'm going to have to try. Yeah, it still works. All right. Well, sorry, people.
So we can't talk about cars that have a 1 or a 2 in them.
I just have to find a new hotkey.
So McLaren 720's out. We got a whole bunch of cars we can't talk
about. I know.
About.
I need to make new hotkeys. I'm sorry. All right. So turbocharged engine versus NA engine. A lot more power as well. Power and torque from the GT2 RS.
But for someone that drives on the track, you want... You want throttle response that's easily manageable.
Mm.
And so when you're mid, let's go back to 8 and 9, you know, Willow, big Willow. 8 and 9, if you want to be able to press the accelerator pedal a millimeter and get a little more power. On the GT2, you get this kick in your ass.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, if you're right on the edge of adhesion, the last thing you want is another 70 horsepower.
Yeah.
The GT2 RS is a beast. If you're a professional,
yeah,
and on the Autobahn or telling anyone to F off,
yeah,
it'd be spectacular. But for most of us, on the amateur to, you know, semi-talented level, the GT3 RS is just incredible.
So, you know, Spike, you know, Spike Ferriston, right?
Yeah.
You know, Spike, my buddy, he had a GT3 RS and he swapped it for the 2 RS for street driving. And he prefers the 2 on the street.
I would argue the 2 is probably better on the street because you've got the turbocharged and you can blast away from people. The 3, you really have to wind out.
Yeah.
I think redlines at like 8,500 RPM or something.
It's a fucking
zing
motor. Yeah.
It sings.
But doesn't it feel like it's dragging an anchor after you drive the 2 a little bit?
It feels a little lighter.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's me.
That's
an
you.
Asshole.
It feels a little lighter. And it is a little lighter because you don't have the intercoolers and things like that. You know, the GT2's got a distilled water tank up in the nose just to spray in the intercoolers. I mean, it's overkill.
I like that kind of stuff.
But it hauls ass. I was doing like 170 something down the back straight.
You crossed the kink at like 170?
Yeah, I was scared to death. I mean, it was literally, it was
remember, were you there for ZR1 at Road Atlanta? For C7 ZR1?
No, I did not do that. Since
C7 ZR1, they, you know, at Road Atlanta, this is a fucking monster of a car. It wants to jump out of its own wheels. Like, yeah, so scary. A riot, but really, really terrifying. And, you know, I did like a 10-lap session in the ZR1 and almost got used to it, right? But then I got back in a Grand Sport afterwards and ran there. Like, you want to go on the Grand Sport? Fuck yeah, go out. The Grand Sport was like a Miata afterwards. And that must have been actually like the 3RS have been like, oh, I can kind of be really aggressive with this
car
now.
Well, the 2 hauled ass up the hill. The 2 didn't even feel the hills.
Yeah.
And the 3 was like, okay, I'm going up a hill now. There's mm-hmm. there's a gradient outside. Mm-hmm. And
but it just...
And the sound coming, you know, one's muffled by the turbochargers. Yeah. You know, turbochargers, you know, do quiet the exhaust. But
I don't think the two, it sounds like a Porsche turbo, but it doesn't sound like anything particularly
no.
special to me, whereas the 3 does really sound very rowdy.
It sounds like a wastegate dump yeah. mixed with exhaust. So there's so much boost coming out that it's like afterburner.
Yeah.
It sounds like afterburner. It doesn't sound like a car engine at that point when it's at wide open throttle.
The 720S on the track is like that too.
It's just like rushing of air. I love the 720.
How do you not? It's the fucking best thing ever.
And the 720s, and to me, you know, the 720 felt quicker than the GT2 RS.
I think
but the GT2 RS, when I was mid corner, you could apply the power and all that weight on its ass, it just stuck, and the 720 would start to get a little twitchy.
Yeah. Oh, the my experiment just proved correct.
You
started to type in 720 and it switched the screens. Yeah. Oh, God. Be still my heart for you, 720. Come back
to
me.
This. And, you know, the 720 is one of those cars that's gorgeous to look at, but you got to drive it. It's just so insanely fast. It's just, it's wicked.
It's,
and,
like,
you know, you're getting 20 or 30 miles an hour and you just mash it. And the boost, the boost builds. As you get faster,
like so when it doesn't feel like shift and it pulls harder,
it doesn't feel like it's falling. Right, yeah. Every other car in the world, you get in there second, third, fourth, fifth, and it slows down the faster it goes. The 720 is the opposite. Yeah. It's like someone flipped it around and it gets faster.
The only other place I've seen that happen is actually the Hennessy Venom GT. Remember that thing? And that was a manual too, and it really there was a significance. Like it was a pretty hard jump from like second to third to fourth, and it really got crazy.
That's on the way to Palm Springs, isn't it?
Yeah, road? That's off like the 74 yep. or one of those. I love that road. It's a phenomenal road.
They closed it because the fire burned a lot of that road.
What's your, let's see, what else is happening in the world of cars? What's your take on on the mobility situation here in California? Have you fucked with the scooters yet?
No, I'm. I don't do the scooters.
Dude, you got to.
I saw them all laid all around your neighborhood, though.
Yeah.
I want to get out and trip on one and get a lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean, good luck.
They're like trash. I saw one on the freeway the other day.
Yeah,
I was
like
literally
litter.
Going down like the 5, and there was a bird scooter between the 2 and 3 lane.
That's hilarious.
And everyone is
probably
swerving
fell off a truck.
And it's one of those things where you see the people swerve in front, and you're like, it's like they're opening a wake.
Mm.
So I swerve, and I'm like, shit, that was a bird scooter.
It probably fell off a truck. Those the secondary economy of chargers. I'm riding this thing. You see this in my?
I saw that out in the other room.
Yeah. So this is a vintage electric.
Now that I saw you posted that there it is,
dude.
You
know, this
10
is from
million
my Instagram.
Percent. You need a helmet.
I didn't wear one today, but you probably should wear one. It goes 35 miles an hour.
That's hauling
so
ass.
Fast, and it. So I got.
I don't
here.
Think you could pedal a bike 35 miles an hour.
I mean,
just like a mountain bike,
like Lance Armstrong could on a road bike.
But it's a road bike.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
On a
no.
mountain bike, if you're doing 30 miles an hour, you're spinning as fast as you can.
I had a mountain bike. I mean, I still have a mountain bike that I ride all the time, and my max on it is like 17.
Right.
This is flying. I pass cars on this sometimes. And it. So I'm trying today. This is my first time riding it here and riding it home. I'm hoping I make it home. It says I have 3/4 charge left after getting here.
How far will it go?
They say 50 miles, but not in the same, you know, But they kind of looked, they were like, look, if you're going like max speed the whole way, it's really more like 20 or 25. Because, like, you know, obviously the more, the faster you go. But it has regen. It has regenerative braking, which is pretty cool. It has these lovely
head. It's in the hub in the rear.
It's like, in the hub in the rear. It has these beautiful LED head and tail lights, which are like dark sensing. So they automatically come on after at dark.
A bike with automatic headlights.
And the hand grips are like these, and the seat are this really beautiful leather. Go pick it up when we leave. It's got to be 40, 50 pounds. Getting that thing, the downside of one of these things, if you have to go up a set of stairs, oh, God help you.
Yeah, because a light road bike is like 15 to 20 pounds. A mountain bike's like 25 to 30. A downhill bike's like 35 pounds.
This is so heavy. And that's probably 40
or 50 pounds.
Yeah, I haven't weighed it, but if it was 50, I wouldn't be surprised. It's all metal.
And what are the pedals actually work, or are they just like aesthetically pleasing?
They work in the to the extent that if the battery dies completely, you can pedal at home. It's geared like a beach cruiser, so you could probably only go 6 or 7 miles an hour with the pedals. But like, if it dies, you can pedal at home. Like, it is a functional.
But then you're hauling 50 pounds of bike.
No, you have a shit ride. And they gave me two of them, actually. The other one is slightly different. The other one doesn't look quite as cool. Looks a little more like a mountain bike. Still has this sort of motorcycle engine-shaped battery pack. But it's a pedal assist one. So rather than this one straight up has a throttle, like on the thumb. The other one, it's the same speed, but it has a gear set in the back. So you have different gears, and it's a little more mountain bikey. It has a front suspension fork. And when you're pedaling it, like, it's not like, like at first I was, they described it as it's like, it's, you have to pedal, but like, it makes you Superman. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. Like, it just gives
you. They call it like a assist.
Yeah, pedal assist.
Right.
But what, how it really works is, if you're moving those pedals at all, it detects that you're moving the pedals, and it gives you full fucking beans. So you pedal like this. My feet are going like this. You pedal slow. Let's call it a revolution every 2 to 3 seconds. And you're going 24, 25 miles an hour, mobbing with no, and you're, the pedals themselves, wow, like no resistance. You're just pedaling in air.
Oh, so you're not even pushing.
You're not even pushing it at all. Gears. No.
And does it have front shocks?
The other one, the pedal assist one, does. This one does not. They just
so this is a hardtail.
This is a hard. Yeah. This one goes 35 with a hardtail, and honestly.
And those look like straight forks. I mean, most bikes, when I was like, my Schwinn Stingray had the curved forks. They absorb a
little bit. It's not curved. It's angled a little, but it's not curved. If I have any criticism about this bike, at this performance level and price point, it should have suspension. Like front, at least.
It's got auto-dimming headlights.
Yeah, it should have a front suspension. And they have a new one that's just came out or is about to come out that is basically this but has a front suspension.
Does it have CarPlay?
No.
I'm kidding.
But the wheels ones do. It's funny you said that because those wheels things, that which are the little bikes, that, like bird scooters, mm-hmm, but they're little bikes, have Bluetooth speakers on them that you could play your phone on.
Because that's what we want, more distracted people. Dude, on scooters.
Better that driving. Than it's better that than wearing headphones. Headphones is bad.
Yeah.
At least on a, like a reason. Oh, here's a sort of. It's that's kind you of know, a picture.
I sold my 930 about a year and a half ago, and I've been envious of your G Series forever.
Do you want to do a Safari or just of a G Series car in general?
I like your Safari.
They're so fun.
The Safari's cool.
Lee's list is
my
very long.
930
right now.
Was just geared far, you know, 4-speed manual, just geared way too tall for Southern California.
Yeah, those 4-speed cars are tough to drive in traffic.
It was this a pain one, in the ass.
Did you see this? This is Lee's Safari Turbo. This is a
So what year is that? Like a 79?
I don't know. But it is a real 930. It is a 3-liter turbo, and it is a 4-speed car.
So a 3-liter would be one of the first ones. I don't know if he's got an intercooler or not. But those are sweet.
It makes 480 horsepower. It fucking goes. Wow. And it's a 4-speed. And I said to Lee, like, tell me about the 4-speed and the off-roading, because I figured that like wouldn't really
that
work.
Would suck.
And he goes, no, you don't get it. He goes, you know how in your Safari, meaning mine,
you got a 5-speed, right?
I have a G50 car, which is great. But in the slow speed stuff, I do have to go to first sometimes. In this,
you just keep it.
You're in first all the time. You never have to go to second because the red line on this car in first is like 58. So he's like, when you're off-roading in this, you're just in first all the time. And he said it's actually quite lovely.
My 930 on like Decker was in first gear.
Yeah.
And I would just hang it in first gear the whole time.
Fucking Magnus came down here and his 930 not too long ago. Here's Rick Ingram's Safari from Brumos. Looks rad.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, Magnus came down here in one of his 930s and sat in traffic the whole time. Mate, I was just in first gear for fucking 2 hours, mate. Look at this interior. Lee just finished. The dogs, dude. That I'm so bummed that I don't have that.
You no, can I'm redo
not.
It.
I'm not. I love my interior, but these dogs are the shit. I highly recommend you get a safari car. They're really fun. It's the most fun daily driver ever. This is Lee's newest
bill. I'm running out of places to park
electric
cars.
Blue. Acid blue, maybe?
I think I'll park it in your garage.
I got you. West Side Collector Car Storage coming soon. This was today. I just went over there. We got these are the vertical posts for the lifts.
How many you gonna stack? Three high? Two
Four.
High? Four high?
Those quads. Look, this is a human down here.
I know what a human looks like.
It's 38 feet tall. I know, but a lot of people miss this human.
Oh, they think it's like a mannequin.
Yeah. No, it's 38 feet tall, and you're stacking four. And I got 18 of them.
Holy shit.
That's going to be badass. I'm so excited. Yeah, if you got cars to store in L.A., hit me up.
September?
September we're opening. Yeah, it's going to be real cool.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and the new podcast studio is going to be great.
Oh, is it going to have a studio built in?
Upstairs in the offices, office area, there's good. We are building a podcast studio, and it's going to be with the right next to the members' lounge, so the members can chill and drink scotch and shit while we're recording. It'll be nice, that on air light thing happening. You know what I mean?
So on the way over here, I was listening to one of your old podcasts, and you said, "What is one of the crappiest cars you've ever driven?"
Oh yeah,
and I started to remember years and years ago when I was in college. I went to Cal Poly up in San Luis Obispo. I worked for Hertz Rent-A-Car.
Uh-huh.
And we'd rent, Mercury Topazes and some real crap stuff.
My parents had a Topaz
stuff.
When I was younger.
I'm sorry. And,
piece of shit.
But we also rented something called a Pontiac Le Mans.
Oh, yeah.
And this was back, I think it was Korean made.
Like the 80s one, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not those are no, gorgeous no, no. compared to this thing. Probably like a 19...
This.
Like, yes. Yeah, that's probably what they look like.
How about this? I'll give you a more complimentary picture.
Yeah, 1988, late 80s, and it was the Pontiac Le Mans, and it was hands down the biggest piece of shit. And I thought, someday I'd top it. Just slow, uncomfortable, miserable car. That's not the U.S. spec, though.
No, that's an Opel Kadett, which is what the Pontiac Le Mans actually was.
But I think deep down inside, it was a Korean car.
It was a... What was it?
Because that's the U.S. version.
That's the U.S. version from the junkyard. Pontiac Le Mans. Let's see. Let's 1966, see. 77, 88 to 93.
Yeah, it's a Daewoo.
It's a Daewoo Le Mans. Oh, God.
It was a horrible, horrible car. Like the white walls. Oh, like one white wall.
One white wall.
Because those are the driven wheels. They must be white walls. Yeah. And the nice hubcaps.
Oh, no. Sold in America and New Zealand markets until 1993. What a shitbox.
I mean, I don't know who the hell would buy that thing, but it was just the biggest
really
piece of shit.
So
I figured if
you're
ever going to ask me that, I'm going to go Pontiac Le Mans.
That's a good one. Should we get to some questions? We've got some questions.
Just a piece of crap.
If you guys want to get some questions in the Super Chat for us live folks, get them in now. I'm going to close the Super Chat in 5 minutes. So we got a few in here. What do we got going on? Nick Alain, like Alain Prost, says, I'm in L.A. on Monday and Tuesday for an interview. Should I go to the Mullen or the Peterson? Well, the Peterson is close and Mullen is far. Mullen's not in L.A. It's in Oxnard.
Right. Mullen is actually right around the corner from my house.
Mullen is amazing.
But then again, I may as well live in Canada
if
at this
you've got
point.
The time, Mullen rules, but definitely go to the Peterson.
But there's a different vibe. There's a different vibe in both. Mullen is serene and very violinish and just gorgeous, spectacular lighting. And the Peterson is more bring your family, check the things out. It's you can be loud and you can yell at people. But I think they're both worth it.
100%.
But like you said, the Mullen and the Peterson are about 2 hours apart. Yeah, as far don't look on a map and say, oh, 36 miles. we can do one for breakfast, catch lunch. No, this is, one's, it's L.A. Yeah.
And he also says, I own three cars and I wrench and I need to garage at least one. How do L.A. people do it?
Oh, I bought a house with a three-car garage.
It's tough. You can live out where he lives. Or you can live where I live and store your cars at Westside Collector Car Storage. If you're in West L.A., Matt at WestsideCollectorCarStorage.com. Let's see. Riley says, do I recommend the other sporty car rental apps similar to Turo for the Seattle area? Are there any other car apps for renting besides? So there's Haggerty has the drive share thing. I don't know if it's available in all places.
I don't know
places.
What's available in Seattle. What you got to do is just get online and start Googling out.
Well, should we look? Let's see. Let's find out. Seattle. Let's do some Google food.
Don't hit a two or three or a one.
Sports car. Seattle sports car rental. Do we have anything? BMW and Minis in Seattle. Exotic car collection. I mean, you can actually. Oh, you have a Sixt in Seattle?
Oh, Sixt is great.
Sixt has good cars.
Sixt is good. European-based.
When I'm in Europe, yeah. I only rent from Sixt. Not a paid endorsement. I actually do like
them. I rent from Sixt also. No endorsement either.
Yeah. I would. Sixt, what I like about them is there's no or similar.
Right, you get the car you reserve.
If you say F-Pace, you get an F-Pace.
You're not picking color, but you will get your F-Pace.
Yeah, yeah, and I like that a lot. So I would look at that. I don't know about any peer-to-peer apps besides Turo, though. Sorry. And DriveShare for Haggerty for vintage cars, maybe not available in your city. Swervin 08, what's a better daily driver, a new Accord Sport 2.0T or a used Charger RT 60 miles per day in the Chicago area? Need to fit three kids in the back, upgrading from a Focus ST.
I know what I would take.
What would you take?
The more I commute, the more I like mass and weight, and I like quietness. And I think the Charger's going to be a little quieter.
The Charger?
Yeah. Because the Accord will be a little lighter, a little louder, more acoustic brightness
just
to it.
Just road noise to
just
it?
Just road noise. And I think, I think you'll be more comfortable in the Charger.
I actually concur. Make sure you get a 13 and up, 14 and up. Yeah. When they got the 8-speed, you want
definitely want the
1,000% the post-refresh Charger.
And you'll look cooler in a Charger, too.
Yeah, and if you can get one of the cool enthusiast ones, like the Super B ones or whatever those tend to hold their value
a little bit. I don't see anything in there saying I need fuel economy or fuel efficiency.
Don't they have cylinder deactivation on the RTs?
Sure.
Duffman Can't Breathe. I sold my 78,000-mile E46 M3 and got a new Civic SI four-door. Help me feel okay.
I can't.
You're not going to spend much on maintenance, probably.
You're right.
2017 Civic SI. That's pre-turbo, right? Call up Emmanuel at NA Performance here in LA and get yourself a Roots supercharger. Thing will be fucking mobbing. Coilovers, lightweight wheels and tires, supercharger, mobbing.
E46 M3.
I know.
That's a lot of people.
It says,
that's
help me feel okay.
That's my son's dream car.
Help me feel okay. That's your son's dream car? I'm glad his dream car is so attainable. Yeah. That's lovely. My dream cars were always way out there.
Unobtainable.
Yeah.
The Civic Si is a great little car.
They're pretty fun.
It's going to be super reliable.
Best
you can
shifter
save
in
your
the
money
business.
And buy your E46 back.
Yeah. I mean, if you drive that for a while and save some money on the side and don't spend it on maintenance, you could buy another BMW like E30, like Canyon Rat car, maybe. I think maybe.
They're both good cars. No complaints.
I think when my building's done, is it bad that I keep saying no more builds, but I keep wanting to do builds?
No, builds are fun. They're addictive.
I want to do a pretty basic build. I want to do an E30 sedan or wagon.
Okay.
With an S52
or S52.
Probably, maybe S50, maybe a 4, but probably an S52.
That'd be a pretty sweet setup.
Yeah.
And it would fly.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. We're talking
But it
about
would also be like not
annoying
to drive. But no, it would be not annoying
to
drive around.
Because they're very comfortable cars. Yeah. They're actually,
they're
outside
spacious.
Is physically small, but the doors are so thin, you have so much room in the inside of them.
I drove an E30 literally like a shitbox challenge for Drive on NBC Sports, and I fucking loved it. It was great.
I wonder if you could put the flares from a M3 on an E30 sedan.
Oh, you could. Yeah, I mean, now we're doing body work. Yeah, now it's becoming a thing. But yes, it's possible. I know the guy to do it too. I know a guy who turned an E46 Like a touring.
E46 wagon M3 he built. Mark Norris here in LA. He's like the M3 guy. And he's got one. It's fucking
sick. I've seen an E39 M5 touring.
Yes. That's hot.
And I love
they just sold a one on Bring a Trailer that was like a replica, but it was a really, really good one. I'll find it for you because it sold for a shitload of money. Let's see.
E39 M5 touring.
It was no.
I guess not.
E39 M5? Where was that touring? What happened to it? Maybe they didn't
was
put
it a 540?
Yeah, it must have been a 540 touring. Maybe that's why.
Now they actually sold a 540 touring.
Yes, they did. But that someone had turned it into an M5. That.
Oh, M5 swap.
Yeah.
So it's got the NA 5-liter V8.
That's from 2017. Hmm.
That's a good price, by the way.
Well, it was back in
2017.
It's a very 2017 price, isn't it? It's not a 2019 price.
So the price is, what, 17 grand it went for, something?
27 grand. Grand. Oh, my God. I would have 1,000% bought this car.
Look how clean it is.
It's so nice. I would have bought
it's a great color.
I totally would have bought that for fucking 25 grand.
And it's a good, clean swap.
Yeah.
It's not some bastardized car.
That's doable, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I may do a BMW build at some point. It's tempting. Dylan says, I'm moving from Jersey to Sacktown in a few weeks. Anything I should know about? The Sacramento Auto Museum is very charming. Go check that out. Anything I should know about weird road laws and regulations?
It depends what you're bringing over.
Lane splitting's legal here. Don't be mad at people who do it.
And
watch for it.
Watch in your mirrors for the bikes.
Get used to looking out for lane splitters for sure. And up north, you got Thunder Hill up there. You got beautiful roads.
Drive up to Tahoe. Some gorgeous stuff up there.
Yeah, that's what I would do. And can you still, is that collection, that car collection still at Hera's? Is the Hera collection still there? Is it completely dispersed
up in Reno?
In Reno.
I'm not sure.
I would look for that in Reno. Reno's fucking fun. I don't know how Reno became like a joke. Like a punchline.
I would move to Reno.
But it shouldn't be because it rules.
I would move to Reno. There's some beautiful roads up there. You've got the Nevada laws as far as income tax and things like that. And it's still very free spirit.
And you can drive 45 minutes to Tahoe to go skiing.
And you can haul ass on those roads.
Yes. They had, remember that Reno Fernley Raceway they had for a minute?
The Reno Tourism District.
I would love to take their money. let's see. Vlad says, I recommended you a 981 Boxster Spider, but I went and got a Lotus Exige V6 instead, so I won't ask for car buying advice. All right. Meta question. What makes a good super chat? Don't ask car advice. Ask other things of the guest besides car advice. That's what makes a good
super chat. Now, interestingly enough, I have a 987 Boxster Spider.
Do you?
And
Is that the first generation,
the one with that really finicky roof, but I've never even put the roof
tent,
up
because it's tent roof.
But it sits in, you know, the roof is stored away. But what a fun little freaking car. I put Cup 2s on it, and it's manual, and it's got the carbon fiber bucket seats, and it weighs about 2,800 pounds, 320 horsepower, naturally aspirated 3.2.
I bet. And
I just drove it yesterday.
So
it is a freaking blast.
I bet that's
and
great.
I love the thing.
Are these sufficiently depreciated yet?
Yeah, I'm making money. I've already made probably 10 grand on it.
I
bought it a year ago. Now they're going up.
So they
bought them now to like mid 40s.
Okay.
And now they're starting to crawl back up. And now they announced the new Spider. And it's GT2 doors, aluminum trunk. I mean, it just. And that's the lightest lovely. Wheels Porsche had ever made up to that point.
Aren't those like 996 GT3 wheels?
No, they're even lighter. They're called Spider wheels. Now, the downside is if you hit a curb, you're going to bend them.
Oh.
But there's...
What do they cost, dare I ask?
I don't know.
Lovely car. What color is yours?
Mine's black with silver.
That's good. I like that.
And I found it up in Oregon.
Have you ever wished you had a roof?
No, never.
Not once?
Never once. I was up on Angel's Crest, and I think I was getting sunburned to the point where I was looking like a raisin, and I opened up the trunk and put the bikini top on it, and then I didn't care anymore.
I think I would like to have you know what maybe be fun? What about an E30 convertible build?
That'd be fun.
Have you ever driven an E30 convertible?
I think
are they flimsy and flexy?
I was just going to say, I think an E30 convertible would be a noodle.
Yeah, me too. I got to drive one.
In that era, because I remember even my 930,
30 was pretty flexible in a 911 Cabriolet of that era. It's just like a wet noodle.
Yeah.
And I don't think, this is before CAD CAM manufacturing. And I think they just most
should put some most bars cars, there.
I mean, I used to laugh that I had an old Audi 5000 and I'd jack up one corner and I'd open the door to get something. And then I'd go to shut the door and the door would be off by like a half inch.
Yeah.
And my dad'd say, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm trying to shut the door." And you'd have to lower the car to shut the door again.
Yeah, no, we don't want that.
And you wondered why no one survived a car crash. Maybe a
sedan.
Yeah.
So. Cars in Comments says, "I just finished a 5-day rally school at Team O'Neill." Oh, I bet that was great. Huge amount of fun. Learned a ton about car control. As you do, I always say, your first driving school, unless you specifically are going to get a racing license, you should do rally school. Because the car is never straight. It's always sideways. It goes
back to our talk about rain on the track days.
Yeah, but at a rally school.
Right. You're supposed to be going sideways.
They don't put walls and shit there. They make it great. I fucking love rally school. What driving school would you recommend next if you've already done Team O'Neill? I mean, you can go with a tarmac one. Start down the tarmac road. I don't even know who's doing good driving schools.
You know, a lot of the driving schools are closed down.
So where do people go?
You can go to BMW Club, Porsche Club, a lot of those, the Miata clubs, mm-hmm. they will have instructors and you can bring your own cars out there.
So
and,
just track days with instructors.
Just track days with instructors. And just listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
And just follow their advice because even the most novice beginner will learn something.
I agree with that sentiment. If Cars and Comments has a sports car and can get to track days, you could definitely do that, and it's a cheaper way than committing to a whole school. I honestly haven't looked into the schools. I know someone bought out the rights to Skip Barber and is running it again with Mustangs. I don't know how well they're doing, although I know that a couple people, one person included, has a bit of a sour taste in their mouth because they had booked a school at Skip Barber pre-bankruptcy, and they never got their money back.
And they cleaned their slate.
Yeah, and they never got their money back, and they never got to do. And the new school wouldn't honor them, so I'm a bit sore on that for my friend.
My son has got an 18 GTI, and mm-hmm. I bought him a second set of wheels and tires.
Yeah.
And he tracks it on the second set of wheels and tires. So he comes home, puts the all seasons back on, drives around LA, and then that's the only. As long as you're semi nice to your car, the only thing you're really going to do is chew up the tires and maybe go through a set of brakes.
Yeah, you can totally take your car to track days if you like.
Totally.
Just pay attention to a few things. Yeah, yeah. I don't have another school for you. I love Dirtfish outside of Seattle if you want to go with another rally type experience. Dirtfish is the jam. But that's all I got for you. James says, Safari plus backcountry discovery route. Have you seen these backcountry discovery routes?
No.
So the backcountry discovery routes for people who like off-roading, backcountry discovery route. These are some routes that are mainly for motorcycles.
Those are cool.
Mainly for motorcycles, but also totally doable in cars. And I'm telling you,
Safari.
My Safari could do all, I think, pretty much. Like, I did the Utah.
Are they wide enough?
Yeah. Yeah. I did the Utah one. So we went from Phoenix all the way up through Utah to Idaho. I did it in a stock Previa, like a fucking Toyota Previa. The Washington one, we did in a 1987 Tercel and drove into Canada. So, like, it's doable. And we had in the Utah one, I had a totally stock F-150 FX4 as a support vehicle. And in the Washington one, we had a totally stock Jeep Grand Cherokee Overland as a support vehicle. And both of those vehicles were totally fine. So these routes are amazing. They cross entire states without using pavement. And
That's crazy.
Are fucking so beautiful. And I cannot wait to do the Colorado one. And I cannot wait to do the Idaho one. And we are waiting for them to finish the California one. They have not finished it yet.
I can only imagine. I was up in Jackson Hole last weekend. Actually drove the family home from Jackson Hole and went through Zion.
Really?
And like that. It was beautiful.
In what?
You're not supposed to.
The Accord?
No, Chrysler Pacifica minivan.
Oh, yeah, rental, right?
No, it was a trip. Oh. It was a manufacturer trip.
Oh, so a family press trip?
Chrysler flew everyone to Jackson Hole and handed everyone...
the keys and said, hey, go back home. No one guy drove to Miami, people went to New York, Atlanta, and I drove back to LA. And,
how about that?
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
I bet. And going that road through Zion from the east
gorgeous.
Down through the main exit is extraordinary.
It was gorgeous.
So anyway.
That's pretty cool.
These are great. I'm not necessarily taking the safari on this route. However, Mr. Lee Keen, builder of these safaris, is putting together a West Coast. He's got his East Coast safari rally this year. I can't quite make it to that one. We're doing a West Coast one next year in which many of these safari owners will ship their cars out, and we're going to do it all together. I don't know the exact route, but it's going to be West Coast, and I'm going to be on that one. So there you go. Let's see. Oh, my God. Elliot, casual restaurant recommendations in L.A., Venice. Oh, my God. Felix. Eat at Felix. It's so good. if you can get a reservation, eat at Felix. If not, go to the Whaler in Venice. That's my spot. I love the Whaler. The food is the chef is one of the like experts on bar rescue. Last question. Did I ever meet, Brendan says, did I ever meet Buster? What does that mean?
Is this reference to Kelly Blue Book? I grew up with Kelly's name, which was sold over a decade ago.
Oh, that's a Kelly Blue Book question.
I believe
I'm sorry.
This is one of the founders. Kelly Blue Book was actually founded in L.A. Over about 100 years ago. And it was a guy that was trying to figure out what – there was no market for used cars and no valuation. So he went out and figured out, hey, these – you know, basically came up with a list and said, this is how much used cars are worth. And it became Kelly's list, Kelly's Blue Book list. And but I've only been with Kelly Blue Book for 3 years. And before that, I was at the Autoblog, AutoWeb, J.D. Power. And
I don't think of you as Kelly Blue Book
so
much.
Yeah, I don't really – I don't know. I've never met the Kellys or anything like that.
Can you explain J.D. Power and Associates to me? Because you were there. What are who and what are they and what do they do exactly?
So J.D. Power and Associates was founded by Dave Power many, many years ago. And he sold the company a little over 10 years ago. And the car was, was sold to McGraw-Hill. Mm. And the company was once again sold to an investment firm. And what they do is they send out surveys, and they figure out quality indexes and reliability reports and things like that. And they sell their data to automakers who get to brag about the results.
Yeah. How much
and they buy the trophies.
They have to pay for the trophies,
and they
right?
pay for the trophies. You know, so everybody's a little different. Consumer Reports surveys its members who pay to subscribe to be surveyed. And, everyone does it differently.
How do you like it at Kelly Blue Book?
I love Kelly Blue Book. They're a lot of fun. It's a family-owned business, Cox Automotive. It's one of the Cox Automotive divisions, along with Auto Trader and Dealer.com. We also own Mannheim Auctions and trucking companies and financing companies.
That's pretty fun, right?
And
if you're like you, you've got the Mannheim guy.
Right.
See, that's
I've got access to everything. And the nice thing about Kelly Blue Book, it's a very well-known name. It's very friendly, family friendly. Still get to drive a bunch of cool cars. And I've got a great team. Work with Lynn. It's a lot of fun. The commute sucks.
That is a
terrible. That said,
do you have to go to the office every day?
No, I don't go to the office every day. Maybe 10 times a month.
Okay, that's bad, but that's not the worst.
So this week I'll go in today. I'll go in tomorrow. My son. I'm going to go visit a college with my son tomorrow or on Wednesday.
Where is he looking at schools?
He got accepted to USC and Pepperdine.
Oh,
and so he was.
Are you very religious?
No, not at all.
I thought Pepperdine's like a super Jesus school.
It is. It's super. It just.
It's also a country club, by the way.
So I'll ask.
Fucking Pepperdine. I drive by it every time I go to the canyons in Malibu.
So my son's not going to like this, but he graduated with honors from high school and went back to Purdue. In Indiana.
Okay.
But being a Southern California kid moving to Indiana, he just went into major culture shock and just imploded on himself.
Yeah.
And he came home and he said, Daddy, going to be pissed if I go to junior college because I want to transfer to a California school.
Yeah.
And so I said, go for it. So he stayed home. And I said, if you stay home, I'll buy you a new car. So I bought him a GTI because it saves me money.
Yeah.
And so now he worked his ass off, got accepted to USC and Pepperdine.
Well, those are good schools.
And they're both about the same amount of insane money. So we're going to go visit SC on Wednesday, and he's going to make a decision by the end of the week.
There you go. Well,
so we'll see.
L'chaim.
But
congratulations.
That said, I'm going to go to the office today, tomorrow, maybe Thursday. Next week, I'll go in twice. I'm also on the road an awful lot. Mm. I'm in Europe,
five times.
Are you still
a
doing
year.
The press launch circuit?
I'm doing a lot of press launch stuff, and because I need to have my, you know, my fingers in the pot, whatever the expression is. But you've got to drive all the cars.
Yeah,
and I'm driving everything, like I said, from Corollas and Nissan Versa Notes to the Bentleys. And the
Are
Roses.
You able to go on the launch for a Versa Note and find the joy in a Versa Note, or are you just kind of
joy?
Are you,
is a
are
tough
you autopiloting
I'm,
that?
I'm
at this
not
point?
Finding joy. I'm finding I'm satisfied and just trying to figure out what it is and what makes it tick.
Yeah.
You know, by the time you get into a Nissan Versa Note, it's someone that's looking for something new.
Yeah.
And you and I both know that a used Honda Accord is probably a better buying choice because, you know, the depreciation is always there.
Yeah,
are
you
we
get
there?
Physically more
right.
stuff, and it'll probably be just as reliable.
But there are people, you have to remember, there are people out there right now that, you know, their entire life they waited for a new car, and maybe they only make a certain amount of money, or they only have a certain amount of money that they can spend on a car payment, and maybe this is their chance to get a new car.
Yeah.
And they're going to buy a Mitsubishi or a Nissan Versa Note or something like that. And so, you know, and Nissan Versa Notes come with keyless entry and Apple CarPlay. So,
which
but,
the
but they don't have automatic headlights, which is what your bike has. So
that's true.
Wow.
And on that, I'm going to ride my vintage electric bike home. That's awesome, man. Follow follow Mike Harley at Michael Harley on Instagram.
Just one long word.
And
Michael
of
Harley.
Course, read his joint at KellyBlueBook.com. I can't wait to read your Javagen review. Did you like the Javagen ultimately?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. It's not the first set of keys I'm going to grab, but
the E63 wagon wheels on this are really bizarre.
Those are 22-inch wheels.
They're E63 wheels. What are they doing? Especially with the popularity of like
it sounds so good with a quad exhaust.
Oh, I get
oh
that.
Oh my gosh.
But especially with the popularity of like off-roady shit now,
right.
Like you could AMGify it in that direction instead of, you know, I don't care. I'm not going to complain about the G-Wagon. Thanks for coming, Harley. Enjoy your commute.
Thanks.
Home.
Thanks
sorry
for
to,
having me.
Sorry to turn
I'm going
you
through
loose.
Malibu on the way home. It'll be a beautiful
Oh, it'll
drive.
Be lovely.
It'll
it,
be a
the traffic
nice
be done.
Drive.
Thanks for coming. I'm back for the live, folks. I'm back with a double header tomorrow. I got 1 p.m. My friend Tristan Eaton is an incredible street artist who does literally the sides of buildings, stadiums, like 100 feet tall. And he's also a car guy. He's the one who turned my Mini into an art car back in 2008. It was really, really cool, actually. And then at 5 p.m., I have Lynn Woodward and Aaron Robinson on the show. They're going to talk about the anniversary at Normandy, which they attended. Lamborghini maintenance and probably fucking buses because it's Aaron Robinson. You know, oh no, Aaron Gold. We end up talking about buses.
Aaron Gold's
Robinson.
The bus guy.
We talk about
ambulances
from World War II.
Right.
All right, thanks, Harley. Have a safe trip. See you soon,
thanks.
Buddy. Thank you all for listening. We love you.